Welcome to the Psychology Podcast, where we give you insights into the mind, brain, behavior, and creativity. I'm Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman, and in each episode, I have a conversation with a guest who will stimulate your mind and give you a greater understanding of yourself, others, and the world we live in. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into human possibility. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. Today, it's great to have Coach Pete Carroll on the podcast. One of the three coaches to win a Super Bowl and college football national championship, Pete Carroll is in his 11th season as head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. With his unique always-compete philosophy and relationship-based approach, Carroll has a combined 46 years of highly decorated NFL and collegiate coaching experience. Carroll is also widely known for his off-field impact through community initiatives that aim to reduce youth and gang violence, his leadership with the WE organization that focuses on youth empowerment, Compete to Create, the high-performance mindset platform he co-founded, the Performance Science Institute at USC that he co-created to educate and inspire college students, and his New York Times bestselling Win Forever book. Coach Carroll, so great to chat with you today.
What's up? How are we doing, Scott? Talk to you too.
I'm good. It's great to talk to you. I'm so impressed with all the things you're involved in. You're a busy guy.
Well, we're trying to stay busy this time of year. You know, there's a lot going on here. We're just starting an off season in the NFL virtually for the first time ever, and there's just a lot to it. And so we're having a good time doing it. Our guys are making it through. We're taking it as a big challenge to see if we can do it really well. And that's what we're going to get done. So we just finished our first week a couple minutes ago.
Oh, congrats! So what are some of the main goals you have in for this off season?
Well, what usually is the main goal is to find our work ethic, you know, and get back to it and rediscover that and start all over again. Never assume that we have that. And so that all comes through the process of the off-season training program, the strength and conditioning program, and on the field work that we have. That not being available to us right now, we're diving totally into the mental side of things and really digging in and trying to do a great job in all aspects of, what we can do to get smarter as a team and as a coaching staff. And so that's all happening virtually. We're in a Zoom reality right now, and that's kind of how we're doing.
How are players coping? I mean, they're itching to play, right?
Well, yeah, they really are. We're itching to coach. Everybody's itching to get back out and do the things we do. We're all made to kind of be on the field working. And so the guys are still working out and they're doing their preparation, but it's always difficult when you don't know what your deadlines are, you know? And you don't know when the game's going to be. So we just have to just keep going. It's really about attitude right now, and we've got to do a great job, of maintaining it.
Yeah, that's what I really want to talk to you about today is your inner mind, inner game approach to football. And I was reading your book, Win Forever, and you said in the book, I realized that at the core of my being, I was a competitor. And I was wondering, how do you define the word competition? And where does that word even come from?
Yeah, okay, well, the definition that I've chosen to live with is about striving. To compete is to strive. And it gets misused, misrepresented, and that people think that you got to try to beat somebody and rub their nose in the dirt kind of thing, you know. And so it has a connotation that, you know, for us, I don't really care about that, but that is what happens, you know. So, but our definition is really about striving. And so you're striving to be your best. You're striving to become a better teacher, a better learner, a better coach, a better, you know, podcast guru, you know, whatever it is. And so that's just the way it made sense to me, you know, when I was back in the day, when I was trying to figure all this out and trying to put my world together, I thought, well, I bet, you know, try to find myself and let's see if I can figure that out, you know? And so I wrote a bunch of stuff down and then nothing made sense until I said, I'm a competitor. And then everything fell aside. And that's now become the central theme in our program. It's competition. You know, and everything is built around that. And the thought was, if I'm truly a competitor, then I wanted to design a philosophy that would come directly from what was most truly authentic to myself so that I could do the best job of representing when I had the opportunity. So we compete everything, you know, we're working it through everything that we do. And it's given our whole program a lifeline kind of to something we can relate to and understand. And it's been really fun. It's worked out because competing's fun. You know, when you're striving to get, you know, whatever, whether you're trying to shoot more hoops than the next guy or catch more passes or whatever, there's a whole design that follows it. And you know, we've really made it, you know, a championship type of mentality.
I love that. You know, a lot of people think of competition as purely just sort of domination of someone else. You talk about things like realizing the best version of yourselves and helping people become the most competent human being they become and finding purpose. And that might not be something that people necessarily automatically associate with the word competition, right?
Right, right. So we're striving to attain that kind of, you know, status or whatever. And so that's why we're competing. So always compete is really my philosophy, you know, and I'm a competitor. Yeah. And central team is the competition. So I'm all over it, you know, but it has given us, it's helped us with the process, you know, it's helped us with the mentality. It's helped us with, you know, attaining a lot that we have attained over the time. And, you know, you'd be surprised, Scott, that you might think that as far along as we are in this level of sports, that all we talk about is the championship, you know, the world championship or something. Well, that isn't what we're beating the drum for. We're beating the drum to play as well as we can play. And if everybody can find their best in the game that we're playing, then we're really hard to beat. We've learned that over the years, and you can win forever. Like, you know, and that's kind of where it came from. You know, if you're constantly striving to be your best, then that's all you can possibly hope for, you know? And so, what are you trying to get? You know, it's not about getting, it's about the process. So,
well, what does it mean to be your best on the field? It's more than just winning a game or being your best in terms of talent, right?
Yeah, it's trying to maximize what you have available, you know, and try to, you know, generate the top of the potential that you bring. And so it's hugely mental. And it, of course, it all connects. So all the mental and physical stuff connects. But it's to try to find it, and then it's try to maintain it for as long as you can. Now, I never thought about, you know, you get just win the Super Bowl and then your life's over. You know, to me, is how many can you win? How many times can you keep going back? And how many times can you stay? How long can you stay on top? And how long can you maintain success consistently? That's really, to me, that's what's important, and that's what I, you know, that's why, you know, say, hey, people say, hey, how you doing? How's your program? I don't know. I'll tell you someday when we look back at it, you know, when we'll assess it from out in the distance somewhere. Not right now. Not when we're in the middle of it.
Fair enough. I won't ask you that question. So you wrote your book, Coaches Are Teachers, and this is an area of mutual interest of ours as well as just education more generally. And I was wondering how some of these principles you apply as a coach, do you think could be applied by teachers in elementary school, for instance?
Yeah, for a long time I've thought that. Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a way of life for us, you know, in the way we think about everything whether you're teaching or whether you're, you know, a manager or, you know, in business, or you're a group leader or you're a parent, you know, I think the principles apply, and the principles, you know, that we really talk a lot about at Compete to Create, you know, it's really a big deal for us to relate on all levels to all people if we can. That's what we're striving for. And that means that we're trying to make sense that if you'll care for the people around you, and really care to the point where you want them to be the best they could possibly be, well, that's kind of like being a parent, you know, in a sense, and your kids, it's not any different. And so it's perspective that it's made sense to me that if you really love somebody, you'll do anything to help them. And so if you really care, you'll do anything to help them get where they can go. And that's the mentality. And not many people see that as an NFL mentality. You know, they don't understand what that's all about. So we're trying to help people along the way, you know, figure themselves out, see where they could go, understand themselves, and then hopefully keep striving to find the best that they have to offer. And so that's always been the way. And it's been fun. It's a fun pursuit because you're always working for the best for other people.
Yeah, I bet it's real fun. Hey, everyone. If you find the themes we cover on the Psychology Podcast interesting and enlightening, you might be interested in my new book, Transcend: The New Science of Self-Actualization. The book is the culmination of my journey to scientifically discover the factors that can lead us to optimal health, growth, creativity, peak experiences, and deep fulfillment. I believe we can still manage to have peak experiences, the most wondrous moments that make life worth living, regardless of our current life circumstances. We can choose growth. For more, you can visit transcend-book.com. That's transcend-book.com with a hyphen between the word transcend and the word book. If you get a chance to read the book, it'd be great if you could leave a review on Amazon, tweet about it, or share the book with friends. I truly hope this book can help people get through these tough times and realize that we all have greater resiliency, creativity, and potential within us than we ever realized. Okay, now back to the show.
So when you're recruiting new players for your team, what are some of the most important characteristics you're looking out for?
Well, for our team, they've got to be physically in the profile or close to it.
So I couldn't join the NFL then, no matter how smart or...
I would think, Scott, you wouldn't hit the water if you fell out of a boat.
What does that mean?
No, you gotta be physical and want to hit somebody, and I don't think you'd want to do that. You shouldn't want to do that.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. But what we're looking for, really, when you get down to it, once we clear the physical requirements that it takes, is we're looking for the attitude that they bring and the mentality that they bring. And we're looking for, if we had it ideally set up, it would start with passion. You know, they'd be passionate about what they're doing. And we would want to see people that know how to keep coming back at you and not give up and persevere, And then we would hopefully build a relationship with the game that they play, where they would develop an attitude where nothing was going to keep them from getting what they wanted to get or go where they wanted to go. And they could bounce back from whatever. And that's resilience. And I'm just talking right down the line about grit, those are the elements that really are at the forefront for, being gritty. And that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, because I'm just so interested in this, and this is a common thread in my own career, trying to understand the role of talent versus the role of other factors. And I was reading into your own personal history, and when you got to high school, your freshman year, you were maybe not the strongest, shall we say. I'm trying to be polite.
I was a real dink, I looked like the team mascot, Puberty had passed me by or missed me or something, or flew me over the house or something like that. 110 pounds, and I was a freshman in high school. And in the team picture, I looked like a little kid sitting next to everybody else,
But you became a multi-sport star in high school. This is the point I want to make here: is that you still what did you bring to the table there then?
Well, during that time, up until that time, everything had been cruising along pretty well. I was doing all right and playing a lot of sports. I was playing baseball, basketball, and football. And then when that happened, I was out of the profile in a sense. So what happens? I got pissed. I was mad, man. I was mad that I couldn't, because I had this vision of who I was within, and I couldn't project it where anybody else even knew. So I just had to sit there and wait it out. And a couple of years later, I started growing a little bit and caught up a little bit and got back in the fray kind of. And by the time I was a freshman in college, I went to junior college, still developing. And that's, I got my full height and weight then, it took a long time. So that for me and a kid that had really high expectations, it was a struggle. And it was so frustrating because it was like a bad dream. I couldn't get out of my own way. I couldn't get going and get started.
See, I really resonate with that story. Just being, people thought I was slow when I was young because I had an auditory thing, and was mad the same way you were mad. It's like, well, I think I'm capable of more. Right.
Yeah.
And that sort of inner fire you have, I love that. I really love hearing stories like that. I want to read a quote from Bill Walton. He said, "What I love about Michael Jordan is that he was not the best at anything. He was not the biggest. He was not the strongest. He was not the highest jumper, but he was incredibly, incredibly smart and incredibly disciplined and driven." Do you have players like that on your team?
Sure we do. For years, we've had a team that was made up of half of our guys were draftees and half of them were free agents, that we had acquired, guys that weren't drafted. And the year we won the Super Bowl, I think we had 26 of the 53 guys were undrafted players, that's a common theme, in sports and performance, not just sports, it's in any performance oriented environment and in work environments too. It's the same that the people who have the the deepest desire and the most passion for proving who they are. And they also, really, it's the elements of grit. It goes back to those that will kind of hang through the hard times and the tough times, or they don't back down and quit sidestep. They go right through it and stay after it. You know, it's that mentality. And the easy way to explain it is the chip on the shoulder mentality. But what it really is, Scott, people have really something to prove in whatever they're finding their purpose in. And that the power to prove that is what drives them beyond what normal people would aspire in like. And so that's really what's crucial. And when you go back to what are you looking for, I'd rather play with those guys. I'd rather play with the guys. When it gets right down to it and you're picking players, I'm going to pick the guy that I want to play with. The guy that I would want, if I'm playing a game in the park, that guy I want on my team. And that's not always the best athlete or the guy that's got all the accolades and all, the person that wants to fight the hardest, you know. And so we built our team around that mentality for years.
That's awesome. So tell me a little bit about Compete to Create. What's its mission?
Well, the mission is to help people find their best and simply. And that means that we're going wherever we got to go and working wherever we can work to help people, you know, see what they're capable of doing. And then, in essence, coach them along the way and show them why they're worthy of dreaming the way they dream and seeing what they see for their future and trying to help them manifest that and bring it to life. We do it with a real, real clear sense of how valuable it is to demonstrate that you care, you know, and when you care for people, then you'll listen to them and you'll look after them and you'll learn what's important to them and you'll pour yourself into so that you can serve them the best. And Compete to Create, that's really important to us that we translate that. We think that if you take, just like all the teams I've ever been around, if you treat people in that with that thought, that you're going to help them find their best and you really, truly care and you're going to, you relentlessly are in pursuit of that, they're going to know that and they're going to feel it. And they're going to also, they're going to recognize that value that maybe others hadn't recognized in them. And they'll perform at a higher level. They'll find a deeper sense of loyalty and connectedness, and they'll give you everything they got. And we've just found over the years, if we can connect with players like that, we're more consistent than other people.
So it sounds like in addition to grit, you also have love. That's a big characteristic that you promote culture.
Yeah, I didn't always know that, you know, Scott, when I was coming along, but I realized that really what was driving it, you know, it was the care for the people. And in essence, it's the love. And the easiest way for me to explain it is that if you look at like a parent, like I said, you know, how would you go about helping your children become what they can become? You'll do whatever you can think of. Well, to me, that's how we live it, Compete to Create, and try to translate that and offer that to other people to understand that.
So I'd like to take a moment to talk about Pete's company, Compete to Create, since we're talking about it. As a thank you to all of the frontline workers for COVID-19, Pete and his company, Compete to Create, are offering a free online course in high-performance mindset called Warrior's Edge. The unique curriculum tailored to the various military, government, and first responder branches will prepare personnel with mindset skills that will transform their lives both professionally and professionally. The course is an incredible inside look into Pete's philosophy, culture, and leadership that we're talking about right now, and also includes insights and teachings from his partner, Compete to Create, high-performance psychologist Dr. Michael Gervais, woohoo, also a friend of mine, and former F-19 fighter pilot Dr. Janelle McAulay. You can find it by going to their website at competetocreate.net/warriorsedge. That's competetocreate.net/warriorsedge. It will be available for free for anyone working with COVID-19 throughout the end of 2020. So that's a pretty good offer there.
Yeah, it's a time for us to all, we're all introspective right now. We have this special time with our families and staying home and all of that. Those that will visit the course, they'll see that it begins with self-discovery. It really starts very early there and takes you through the process of uncovering some of the things that you just haven't recognized or realized about yourself as you move forward. And self-discovery process is so crucial, Scott. You know, in your own work, that is what it's all about. You know, you meet the challenges and meet the needs that you have. And as you step along your way, you eventually get to the point where you understand yourself better and more clearly. And you develop your authenticity and you get stronger as you move and you become, you know, true version of what you're capable of being.
You're talking my language, brother. Talking my language.
Yeah. Authenticity. Was out there because it's kind of a little bit of a forgotten art, and I'm really fired up and proud for you that you've been able to put it together in such a beautiful book and in Transcendence, hopefully you're gonna the people that will read it will be transformed. So
thank you. Awesome. That really means a lot to me. So yeah, let's unpack authenticity for a second. What does authenticity look like in a sports context? What do you think like the healthiest form of authenticity looks like?
Well, it's interesting, you know, you'd ask because it's on many levels, you know. Yeah. Authenticity on many levels. Knowing, you know, truly who you are. You can think of it as a person, an individual. Okay, a guy really knows himself really well. He's confident and all that, and steps, you know, to his own beat and all. But a team can also know who they are, and they can be in that great sync with the capabilities and the makeup and the mentality that they all share and become really one mind. And that's, it's truly what championship teams wind up, transitioning, transforming, or transcending to, you know. Mm-hmm. That's what, in my coaching, that's what I'm after. I'm trying to help teams figure out really who they are. And then once we latch on to that, then it's our challenge to consistently represent that and demonstrate and illustrate that when we come to game time. So to me, authenticity is knowing who you are and then consistently, you know, being the person you know yourself to be, you know. Mm-hmm. That's, or being the team you know yourself to be. And it's quite clear.
I know it's a theme with your work. You know, your belief in the importance of self-belief is huge, right?
Sure. So yeah. Self-talk is enormous, you know. Positive self-talk, supportive self-talk, that mechanism for growing and learning and really being authentic is so huge, because you can talk yourself out of anything or talk yourself into almost anything, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
So where there's a real discipline to if you believe that, then there's a real discipline to the kind of self-talk that will support who you are and what you're all about.
So what's the difference between unbelievable self-belief and narcissism? Where do you draw the line?
Well, you know, I don't understand narcissism that well. I don't really understand it that well. But I would say that it's all about truth. It's really truth. Are you are you that which you say you are? Are you that which you as you act? And I would think that narcissism has to do with something that you wish you were, and something that you would hope that people would see you as, and that's what you live to that standard, and so the truth isn't there, you know. And so maybe that's about as easy as I can say it.
Well, I think you nailed it. You nailed it. That's what hundreds of psychological research studies support, is what you just said.
Okay.
Yeah. if that makes you feel any better. Well, you know,
lucked out.
You lucked out. Yeah, because narcissism really is about defending a image that you have of yourself that might not be true, right? Mm. And defending it at all costs. It seems to me like growth requires the form of self-belief you're talking about, which is, and that sometimes that may mean being vulnerable, dare I say, use such a word, or opening yourself up to failure. You know what I mean?
No, I would think our friend Brene Brown would say it is about vulnerability. You know, it is all about that. It's about being willing, you know, willing to put yourself out there, and because you know it's the right thing to do, and that if you really believe in yourself and you really trust in yourself, then you know that you're going to make it through it. You know, so that's, you know, that's great work. It takes great work for individuals to get to that point. But that willingness to be vulnerable is where, like she said, you know, dare put yourself out there, dare to lead, you know, and go for it. And I think that's her first book, you know, and she's the foremost authority there is, I think, on vulnerability. And she would say right off the bat that it's only courage only comes through vulnerability.
Yeah. She's been on the Psychology Podcast. Yeah, so you're in good company.
yeah. We just had a podcast the other day, a couple days ago. So
I love that podcast with you and Steve Kerr, right?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, it's so much, it's so great. So do you ever give pep talks to your players where you use the word vulnerability?
Yeah, Brene's talked to our team.
She's
come in and visited with our club. And so, we're constantly trying to help our guys evolve to the point where they're okay about that. And as she reminded us the other day, you have to build an environment where it's okay. you know, somebody says something like, you know, boy, I was really scared to make that tackle or something like that. And everybody goes, oh, and they woof at you. And they go, well, you know, when's that guy going to say that again? You know, so you have to build. She was talking about building a container, I think, in an environment that will allow for people to be vulnerable and support people to be vulnerable and realize that, hey, that was pretty cool that you did that, because we know that was hard. That was tough to say what you just said. And so, you know, our whole process really, Scott, is it's a one big session of trying to grow, you know, and take advantage and capture the teachable opportunities and grow as much as we can. And that makes us better. It makes us better as people. It makes us better as a teammate. And certainly makes us a better club too.
Mm. You know, when Brené and I were talking on the podcast, we talked about the link between vulnerability and creativity. And creativity is interesting. And I'd love to get your own perspective on creativity, because merely being an expert doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be creative and flexible out there on the field when you have to shift your expertise in a certain way. So I'm wondering how you try to cultivate creativity among your players as well.
Okay. Well, first thought I had is that creativity comes from taking a chance. You got to take a risk, and you got to, you know, because you're putting yourself out there. You know, say like you're painting a picture. You know, paint a picture. Somebody, if somebody's going to look at it, you know, you're going to get, you know, observed, and you're going to get critiqued and all that. And you got to, you know, it's maybe why artists have such a hard time, you know, because you put yourself out there so much, you know. But how we develop and look for creativity to show up is through discipline. It's through the repetitions. It's through the practice that you just practice. Without critique won't get it done, but practice with getting coached, it will help you. Meaning that as you get better through the repetitions and you start to develop skill, when it's a coach shows you that you're getting better, a coach reminds you of, you know, what you're capable of doing, and they constantly are challenging you to do more because they know they see it in you, and so they're. As it happens, what my biggest job is to show us how good we are. I got to show our guys how good they are. And so that they can own that and feel worthy enough to trust themselves. And that's where confidence comes from. And so it's from that accomplishment in your process where the creativity can start to speak. It's through the discipline of the art. You know, and I've used the example over the years, like if you teach somebody to play Mary Had a Little Lamb on the piano, you know, and they just dink their way through it. And you say, okay, come back next week, but practice this every day for 2 hours. By the time they get back to you, a novice can start playing with it, and they can show a little different rhythm, and they can put a little slide on it, and they can you know, make it sound like it's stepped up, and it's like they jazz it up because they've developed the skill that allows them the uninhibited creativity. That's where the freedom comes from the skill. So to me, the creativity comes through that process when you feel – like you have a real sense for something and you believe in it now, you're ready to express it. That's when the greatest creativity occurs.
So you see that as a major characteristic differentiating good athletes from great athletes?
Oh, without question. It comes from the successes and the confidence. It's not just the athleticism. That's not it. That you to be like, I don't know if you're watching Last Dance that's on ESPN.
I love it because that's my childhood right there. Yeah.
The incredible sequence that we're watching of them teaching us what it was like. But you see that. You see the greatness in Michael Jordan is his drive to and passion to be unstoppable. Well, there's other people that are like that too. But they don't have his gifts. Now, I know that Walton talked about him not having this or that. Well, Michael's pretty freaking talented. He could jump. He could leap. He could hang.
Fair enough.
You know, he was quick. He was explosive. I mean, he was all those things. And now you add that passion to him. Now you see, that's like Kobe. You see the greatest of all time. You know, you see, it's really interesting that it's so clear to watch it in basketball and that sport in particular. There's such freedom there in that game and all that. You can see the extraordinary, unique, special quality those guys had.
Yeah, let's unpack that for a second, because you talk about vision and you differentiate that sometimes from a personal philosophy. I was wondering if you could talk about the difference between those two, and then I want to get back to Kobe in a second.
Yeah. Well, philosophy is like it's the collection of your beliefs to me. You know, it's okay. All the things that you believe in, and you put it together and you add them up, and then you kind of see that maybe there's a common theme in there somewhere. There's, you know, some commonality that you can state that this represents, you know, what I believe. You know, always compete. There's, I can't make it. It's as simple as I can make it. I mean, it's not a very involved philosophy, but it's
compete forever.
it's just, you know. So, but that that's so philosophy to me is a collection of beliefs. And what else did you ask about? You asked about
vision. Philosophy. How is that different from vision?
Vision is kind of that's what you're shooting for. You know, that's what you think you can become, and it is what gives you purpose. You know, the vision to be something or somewhere or to create something is what gives you the purpose. You know, without purpose, you're flapping in the wind. So philosophy is kind of how you what you believe in, and then vision is a way of stating what your purpose is. You know, how are you going to carry that philosophy? It's so like I can carry the philosophy I have, I think, to a football team, but I think I could work in a school or I could work in an office building, you know, with that philosophy. But I choose to do it in football. That's my vision. My vision is to, as a football coach, you know, and to help people be good football teams. And so to me, I think the vision to me, I don't think it's right at all. I have no clue. But vision
makes sense.
A purpose, you know, it connects to purpose.
Yeah, so the vision, it's interesting because you see in individuals like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you do see these very early, you see the seeds of it very, very early, that kind of vision. I'm fascinated because I studied in my career prodigies, those who by the age of 10 have a fully formed thing, but they knew, they made a connection, like Yo-Yo Ma made a connection to cello when he was very, very young. He said, this is me. Howard Gardner calls it the crystallizing experience. And I went to middle school and high school with Kobe Bryant, and I noticed even in middle school, he was in eighth grade when I was in sixth grade, but we would watch him play we're talking about an eighth grader, but he played, I could imagine it, remember it in my head. He'd play as though he was Michael Jordan, but not like all of us played like we were, you know, like we want to be like Mike. He played like with this intensity that was like in his head he was already Michael Jordan, you know. And it was clear that so the seed was just so there, and I'm fascinated by all of the genetic, environmental factor, all the factors that combine, but you do tend to see with this kind of level of greatness, you do just tend to see very, very early some vision is kind of already planted in them. It's fascinating to me to watch.
Yeah, he had an early connection with greatness, you know, and he was already on it. That's why he worked so hard. How would he ever find that work ethic? 4 years after he was an eighth grader, he was in the NBA.
I know, that's right. Imagine,
4 years later, you know, what were you doing when you left high school, you know? Could you imagine playing against, you know, the great players that are playing? He couldn't see anything but that. Yeah. And I see that in Russell Wilson, you know, on our team. And he just has this vision for greatness. And he's been on course to be great as far back as he can remember, you know, inspired by his father and his mother and the family. But it was more than that. I mean, he didn't have all of those same attributes that Kobe had. Now, Kobe didn't either when he was an eighth grader, but he certainly had the connection with greatness. We don't see it often enough. You know, I wish it would show up more. It's so obvious in sports because it's on TV and you can watch it, you know, but I'm sure that there's, you know, greatness in moms and dads and architects and doctors and, you know, and teachers and all that too. And we just don't get to see it enough, but it's there.
I love that. And I completely agree. It's all around us. And we often miss it because we're looking at the wrong metrics like we do in school. So you have this quote, you said, without purpose and meaning, there won't be winning. Well, that's a really unique take on things. I can't imagine every coach thinks that way. So why do you think purpose and meaning can increase your chances of winning in sports?
You have to have direction. You know, you have to be driven. You need to be, purpose gives you clarity, and then it's got to really mean something to you, you know, and that's why, you know, I talk about passion right off the bat. You know, we have our friend Angela Duckworth, and she helped me with verbiage and terminology, and she gave me a real leap forward by using, you know, passion, perseverance, resilience. So those need to be necessary. I mean, they're necessary if you do great things, you know, and if you don't have purpose, then you don't know where to put this unique greatness, whatever you have. You don't have, you need somewhere to put it, you know. And we see people that wander through their lives and they don't get connected, and it's a terrible, you know, miscue to miss out on purpose when you have that drive that you just can't quite get it focused, you know. So what we do as coaches, we try to help guys channel, you know, this, what they bring to the game. And I think if you do it, and people working in the office buildings too, it's one of the things I think that then C2C, I come back to that one, is that we're hoping to teach people in the business setting that if you'll champion the people in your organization and figure out who they are and learn what they're all about and care so much that you bring out who they are and make it okay for them to be them, they're going to perform better for you. And your company's going to be way better. I mean, it's going to be way better than somebody that's sitting there and afraid to say who they are or what they're all about. And so it's all that thinking, Scott, that, you know, that ties us together, that it connects you and I also with your background and your purpose and, you know, mine and my purpose. We're on it, you know, we're on to something really special, I think.
Absolutely. And speaking of our common thread, how has humanistic psychology influenced your own personal philosophy? People like Carl Rogers and Abraham Maslow, have they influenced you?
Yeah. I got connected way back in the day, you know. I know there's not many of us left. You know, humanistic psychology is like almost prehistoric, but what it made sense to me back when I was in graduate school, you know, back at the University of Pacific, and a couple instructors were just kind of figuring it out and just kind of uncovering it. We were reading, you know, stuff, and Towards the Psychology of Being was one of the books that was at the foundation from Abraham Maslow, you know, and I think Carl Rogers had On Becoming or something like that was his.
Becoming a Person. Yeah.
Yeah. And those concepts, for whatever reason, Scott, they made sense to me in that I did my thesis, my graduate thesis, on connecting the highest achieving athletes in sports with their, as they measured up towards self-actualization on a inventory that I found, you know. And so I was trying to compare the level of self-actualization with their level of achievement in sport, you know. It was the worst study of all time. It made sense. No significant difference anywhere in anything. But it showed you the connection had already been made for me, yeah. You know, and I couldn't help it. It just did. And I've been kind of in pursuit of making sense of that for a long time. There's a couple of us out there, Scott.
I was going to say, that's pretty badass. I have to say that.
Where's Abe when we need him, you know?
Yeah. Do you think he'd be a Seahawks fan or an Eagles fan? I say that because I'm from Philly.
Yeah, he'd be a freaking Seahawks fan. I don't want him over.
Okay, I'll let that go. Okay, you say every day should be a kind of Super Bowl. Oh, well, I love that. But can you elaborate a little bit on that, what that means?
Well, yeah. I don't know if that was an original thought as much as it was learned thought. And one of my early mentors, you know, John Wooden, you know, to make every day a masterpiece. Why would you not? Why would you not go out and just create the best day you can possibly create? I don't know. What are you thinking if you don't go for it? You know? And so that's basically where it comes from. It's, you know, the pretty optimistic, pretty positive way of looking at things, but why wouldn't you make each day a great day? And it's, to me, the main point of that is it's a choice. You know, we make choices on how we decide to live our lives, and we're the only ones that really control that. We can feel like we're controlled by everybody else, but we're the ones, you know. And so that's why I always come back to, you know, we have the power to choose as we want to live this thing, and then we're up against it. We got to fight our way through it until we get where we need to go. And it ain't easy. It's hard. You know, and that's why you got to keep coming back. And that's why it's so important to have a mentality that allows you to, because otherwise you kind of, well, you know, this is what it is. And I got nowhere to go. You know, I understand that. And I understand where people get there. But if they're on my team, I'm coaching them up trying to get out of that. You know,
well, I want to be on your team. You're very uplifting.
We're on the same team. What are you talking about, man? We're on the same team.
Then I should say I'm glad that I'm on your team, because
me too. I'm glad I'm on your team. I'm making write a book called Transcendence, man.
Thank you. Well, it's called Transcend.
Oh, good. There you go.
But no, you're very uplifting, and you know, every time I talk to you, I leave wanting to win a Super Bowl in whatever that looks like in my own personal life.
No, we don't want to win the Super Bowl necessarily. We want to be the best we can be, Scott.
Okay. be the best we can be.
That's Super Bowl. Those championships, they come to you. You know, when you're right,
they emerge, right?
When it happens, it happens.
Wait, it's kind of like transcendence. It emerges. It's not the goal.
It's called transcend.
Well, you're right. Transcendence is a word, though.
I hear you.
I love. We're like jostling in this podcast. I love it.
It's important, yeah. Battling. You either compete or you're not.
I love it. Well, but we're also having fun. In what extent is fun an important value of yours on the field?
Yeah, it is. If we're not having fun, I'm screwing up. You know, I mean, we're playing the game. We get to play. Man, it's a blast, and it's hard. You know, at times and all that. But hard doesn't mean it's not fun. You know, and so. You know, I always want to stay connected to it as best we can, you know, and I want to make the experience that people have when they're with us memorable and enjoyable. And I want them to laugh and I want them to have a good time with it. And I want them to find the joy in it, and because it's hard, you know. And so I think the combination and the mixture of the great challenge and the frivolity and the fun of that comes with it and the achievement that is also part of fun is goes hand in hand, you know. And so if we're not having fun, I'm screwing up.
So in my life, what would it mean for me to be winning as a psychologist?
Totally. It would be, emphatically, it would be you being the best psychologist you can be. That's all it is. That's all we can ever aspire to. If we aspire to things other than that kind, you're making yourself crazy, you know? I mean, we can't control what's outside of us. What we can only control that which is right there, right in front of us right now. That's about being mindful. That's about being in the moment. That's about being right now, present. That's what this is all about. And if you try to be something else, it just frustrates you more, and you won't perform as well. You won't perform. Just perform Scott just the way you can, as in that psychology hat that you put on. And that's kick ass. That is the winning. The winning isn't I made somebody healthy and I changed their life. That's just the things that happen along the way. What you're trying to do, because that's outside of you. Well, you just be a great you, you know, and make sure you know what that is. You got to figure out what that is, you know. And so if you can do that, and then you can consistently keep finding your way back to it, no matter what happens, you keep coming back to being you. Well, then you're on it. Then you're doing great. And that's a, you know. You know, the guys I love is you see the old guy sitting on the park bench, you know, and he's got the old crumpled hat and the old jacket on or something like that. And, you know, he's kind of just sitting there and you think, oh, that poor guy, you know, and he wouldn't change that hat for anything in the world. Yeah. He wouldn't change his coat. He'd go to that same park bench and sit where he sits because he knows exactly what's important to him. He knows exactly what, you know, that's it, you know, and there's great peace and great harmony in for that, you know, for people in that. And they've found out what's important to them, you know.
Oh, I love that so much. You have no idea how much I love that, or maybe you do. I have an idea, but it's wonderful. Could you give a little bit of a pep talk, even if it's a couple sentences, to people right now who, because of COVID, feel like they're having a hard time being their best selves because they have so much fear?
Yeah, we're all in this thing, and we're all trying to figure it out. I don't have answers. I wish I did, but I do know we've got to keep battling. You know, we got to keep pushing. And as long as we're pushing to make this day a good day, and we'll figure out, okay, get prepared for that next week. Here we go that next day, and just put one day together, one day at a time, and make it as good a day as you can. And generally, that will come from helping somebody else. Generally, that's from giving to somebody else. It's interesting to me that question would be answered, be a great teammate. You know, being a great teammate is serving others and putting the people around you first. No matter how hard it is, I think we can always find somebody that we can help. And if we're helping, we're making good. And if we're making good, it's a good day. And let's go to the next one, you know. And so when it's darkest, there's always somebody that's having a harder time than you are. And if we could find them, help them, uplift, you know, feed them, hug them, whatever it is, I think that's kind of what we're up to right now. It's looking out after the ones around us that need our help. And that's the best way to keep us motivated and keep us really actively doing good stuff.
Hear, hear. So I know that you like thinking in 5-year increments. So I have a question for you relating to that. What's your vision of humans in 5 years if they practice the psychological skills that you teach your athletes?
Oh, man.
Easy question.
I think we're on course to finding a new empathy. You know, I've tried to write about that before to try to make sense of it. But I think we're on the verge of we've seen so much crap going on around us and so much dishonesty and stuff, you know, around us that I think we're going to come through this. And I think people are sensing it already by being around their family so much and being home so much, is that there is great space for new empathy and understanding of others and caring for others. And I hope, whether that's going to happen or not, I don't know, but that's what I hope happens. And I hope we discover how valuable that will be in our own personal lives if we can see the world that way.
Beautiful. I usually like to end my interviews with picking one of my favorite quotes from the guest I have on. So here's a quote.
But there aren't any with me, so we will not end it.
there's a little too many. It took me like a while to figure out which is the one I'm going to end with. So I'd like to end with this one. Strong, trusting relationships among people who are striving to be the best versions of themselves create something powerful. I want to thank you for creating something powerful, not only with your team and your company, but with the world at large and even people like me. You know, I do my psychology with this mentality that you espouse, and you uplift me and inspire me. And I just want to thank you so much for the chat today.
Well, I appreciate that, Scott. You uplift me too. I'm so proud that you've done the work that you've done so far, because not many people see it. And I hope that Transcend really comes out huge for you and people will understand that there's great depth here. Nice going, man. Congrats.
Thanks, Coach. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Psychology Podcast. If you'd like to react in some way to something you heard, I encourage you to join in the discussion at thepsychologypodcast.com. That's thepsychologypodcast.com. Also, please add a rating and review of the podcast on iTunes and subscribe to the Psychology Podcast YouTube channel, as we're really trying to increase our viewership on YouTube. In fact, many of these episodes are in video format on YouTube, so you'll definitely want to check out that channel. Thanks for being such a great supporter of the podcast, and tune in next time for more on the mind, brain, behavior, and creativity.